Hello out there. At the moment I'm speaking to you, I can't find my headphones. I don't know what it is about these headphones, but they keep disappearing on me, and I could never find them in time. But anyway, we proceed. Yes, I was not with you for the past 2 days. I had some medical things to do, tests to do, poking of the arms, getting of the blood, and whatnot. So that is done. And I'm back, one hopes, in pretty good shape. We just proceed. This is life. You know, life, you have an idea of what you want to do with life, but then you never really think that life has an idea of what it wants to do with you. So you always have to be prepared and not be overtaken by surprise. Just go, oh, well, there's a surprise. We have to live with it. Well, the following, we pick back up from where we left off. In this case, the Aubrey case in Georgia. And it is important for us to just methodically follow it, because there's a lot of stuff happening here that has to do not with the case itself, but that has to do with how the nation, how the people are receiving messages through this case. What are those messages? And that's one of the things I want to ask you today. Whether you're paying attention to some of the meanings that are coming to us, the hints and the meanings of this case, are they coming through to us? Are we understanding them? Are we getting the message? It's a very serious issue, and we should be paying attention to these messages, because they've been sent to us for so long now. We probably don't pay very much mind. We probably think, well, you know, it's just another thing. Actually, it's very deep. A whole set of conditioning we're getting through these cases. And I'm going to ask you today what you picked up so far. Okay, 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And I wanted to ask, because this is a continuation of a different discussion from a different era, and yet it's the same. It's remarkable. It is a remarkable thing how so little has changed and so little is expected to change. And we think there's all this change going on, and there isn't very much, really, when you look at things. You see how remarkably the same things have remained over the years. Okay. So let me ask you the question today. There has been a shift in this case. I want you to discuss with us what you think that shift is. What is the shift that has occurred in this case? Are we talking about a murder trial or something else happening here? A shift has occurred. Why has that shift occurred? What is the aim and objective of it? How are we being conditioned to receive it, to understand it? It is not an easy question. I guarantee you, it's not an easy question. But it is very important. You see, different people will be interpreting this case differently. I want to know whether or to what degree you are interpreting this case in accordance with historical memory. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'm going to take 2 minutes to set this up. I found the headphones, and we should be proceeding very shortly. Give you some time to think. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Patrice Lead, and I am hurriedly trying to get the electronic things to operate and be cooperative with me. Not quite yet, but we will just keep moving. All right, what we are doing today is we are charting the shift in this trial of three white men accused of killing Ahmaud Arbery, and we're trying to get a sense of what the shift in the trial is. And why is this shift occurring? What is the intention, you think, with this shift occurring at this time in the trial? All right, I don't see who's up next, but tell me who is. Okay. So we do not have any calls yet, and come on, we need you to move with the speed, all due deliberate speed. What is this shift that is occurring in the trial? What does it portend? What is the meaning of it? Did you even sense it? Did you even sense the shift in this trial? From what to what? That's the question. See, everybody is watching the same thing. So everybody is being conditioned to expect certain things to happen in this trial. But we are not thinking independently. And that is vitally important. We are conditioned to accept just what is given to us as the reporting of this case. I'm saying to you that this case is going through certain changes in order to have a calculated effect or calculated effects on those of us following this case with certain expectations that we have. I'm telling you that there has been a dramatic change in this case. Did you sense it? And what is it? Why am I insisting that there was a dramatic change in this case? And you can't sense it. You didn't sense it. You didn't see it. You don't feel it. Oh, then we have a lot of work to do. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's hear from you now. Okay, who's up? Let me know, because I can't see it. Mohammed from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to all my classmates. And I hope all is well with you. This is the shift I see, and having had some experience in the justice system or the court system in this country, now it appears that when it was people other than European Americans, you had to prove your innocence. okay, you was guilty in their eyes. This has appeared to me from my experience, that you were already guilty and you had to prove their innocence, your innocence. Now that the people are guilty and seen guilty on film, and now the judges in the cases, they seem to be against those who were harmed or killed. It's like they're going on the side of the people who committed the crimes, where there's physical evidence of them having committed the crimes. But yet, they seem to be getting all the benefits and make it difficult for the prosecution to present their case. It's just a reversal. Had that been, said me, I would have had a lawyer, I would have had to prove myself innocent, or if I was guilty, I was assumed guilty until proven innocent. But that's not the case today. It's reversed. And judges seem to be on the side of the accused, who is actually fam of what they did. And they won't allow in. Seem like they're trying to suppress the evidence. And that's just my perspective. Thank you for hearing me.
You're on to something, but you started it, but I think you moved away from it. What, as you backtrack what you have been saying, if you could simplify it, give it a shot again.
Am I still on, Matrice?
Yes, you are.
Okay, now what was the question? Because I can barely hear you.
I'm saying that you're onto something, but you kind of veered off a little bit. I want you to stick with the same point that you raised as you started.
Okay. In the past, if it wasn't European Americans, seemed like the law was against us in all respects. Now the people presenting the cases for those who have been victims, they seem to be the ones, in my perspective, who the court is holding guilty and pulling out every little stop to keep them from presenting the evidence where it can be shown that those accused are guilty. They seem to be sided with them.
In what way have you detected that? Could you discuss how you have detected that in the course of this trial?
Well, in the case of the Rittenhouse, the people who were actually murdered, they cannot review.
Not Rittenhouse. We're talking about this case. In this case.
The brother from Atlanta?
Yes.
From Georgia?
From Georgia.
Yes. Okay, they seem to make him the perpetrator. You know, they accuse him of having done something wrong. And the case is...
Who is the they?
Who is the former law enforcement officer. Excuse me?
Who are the they that you're talking about?
Those people who are guilty of the crimes. Now, one of them is a police officer.
You have to be
if you're a police officer and you someone...
You're giving us
someone,
an idea that a change is occurring. What exactly is the change? So you can't be fuzzy. You have to be specific.
Okay. The guilty are being protected. That's the main thing from where I see it. The guilty are being protected.
Okay.
Let me let someone else get on and present their perspective, because there's a lot out there.
Yeah, but you're not proving your own point. And we're looking for you to guide us through the specifics of your point. But you haven't been able to prove your own point or illustrate your own point. All right, but you got us started.
Okay.
Thank you so much. 888-874-4888.
Okay,
they have changed. What is this change? Why has it occurred or is it occurring? 888-874-4888.
Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Utrice. How you doing?
Okay, Ed. How are you?
I'm here. Me and the storm's hanging. Glad to have you back. Hope all your medical tests and things go well for you.
Yes.
You have my prayers. Pertaining to the Aubrey case, I mean, the only thing I can really see is that white supremacy is alive and well in the criminal justice system. I mean, I'm looking at judges. I'm looking at this judge specifically. Go ahead.
But you're starting at the conclusion. What I want you to do is to methodically take us through the argument you are about to make. What change? First of all, what is this change that you sense is occurring and that I sense is occurring? What is it?
Well, from my perspective, I see the judge in this case is basically testifying. He's preventing the prosecutor from presenting a cogent case. He's taking away the prosecutor's ability to control the narrative, as prosecutors do in cases of this nature. He's cutting him off as far as phraseology. You can't refer to to Ahmaud as a victim. They're working for the defense, in my opinion. And it goes back to even if you go back years ago with the bombing I believe it was in Alabama, and the three girls dying, and how those people never got prosecuted, or even the assassination of Megan Evers, and how that individual never experienced the full brunt of the law. Judges are making decisions that are not judicially conducive. I believe this judge should recuse himself from the case based on some of his decisions. And even in pretrial motions, there have been three prosecutors that have went through that have had to recuse themselves from this case.
You're giving us broad explanations. This requires you to at least give us a pointed example of what the change is that we are experiencing in this trial, and nobody's talking about. What is that change? What is it designed to do?
Well, I'm not seeing any marketable change in the trial, as maybe as bad as you're seeing it. All I'm seeing is a continuation of white supremacy in the criminal justice system and its imperfection, and how white people get away with murdering black people and don't have to suffer any type of judicial or justice in it.
All right.
That's all I'm saying.
Let's stay with that for a minute. How specific can you get in terms of proving fact point?
Well, I mean, you go by the pretrial. You go through three prosecutors. Two of the prosecutors had relationships with the men on trial, or had some ad hoc relationship with them, number one. Number two, the phraseology. You can't refer to Ahmaud Arbery as a victim. You know? Well, did that, and the judge acknowledging the fact that the jury selection was tainted, but not doing what he could do, which is nullify the jury and have a repick. But he acknowledges the fact, yeah, I see that this jury could be racially biased, but I'm going to go ahead with the case anyway. Where's your objectivity as a judge? You know, I mean, there's a lot of taintedness that's going on before the case has even been presented before the jury. And the acknowledgement of the judge at the head of the case blatantly saying that this jury is tainted, but he's allowing it to go on. That's a big red flag for me.
Well, he said that he had great concerns about the conduct of the jury and certainly the way the jury was being used in this case. But he said he didn't see that what has occurred so far, and presumably what is still occurring, is that dramatic, because we see a jury in which 11 of the 12 members are white and there's only one black person on the jury. The judge expressed a view that it may or may not have anything to do with the outcome of the case. So we have to see how it progresses. And then at the end of the trial, this part, he can make up his mind further. But so far, he noted it, which is significant. He noted that he was concerned about this jury and the makeup of the jury and the implications of the imbalance, the marked imbalance in this jury, and whether it will produce a specific kind of result. He didn't say what that result would
be. Okay, let me tell you what I have read as far as pertaining to the selection of the jury specifically. The defense, the lawyer for the defense, stated, and I quote from news from AP sources, he said he's looking for bubbas. He's looking for 11 bubbas. And what is a bubba in his explanation? It's a 35 to 45 year old white male who hasn't gone to college, who lives in that section of the country. That's who he's looking for to be on this trial, number one. Number two, that section of the country is 29% black, 29 to 30% black. How can you have a jury with only one black person? I mean, it's statistically, it doesn't stand to reason. And number three, a judge, in my opinion, is supposed to be impartial. If he sees any doubt, if he sees anything that's going to obstruct justice, they put a motion before the judge to re-impanel the jury, to block out this jury and have the voir dire and the questioning done all over again. And he refused. But then he makes that's a tongue-in-cheek statement. Well, yeah, I know this jury might be skewed, but I'm going to go ahead and see what happens. I mean, that's not justice.
You throw out of the window the implication of what the judge himself said. The judge noted it, and it was significant. He just didn't make a big deal about it, but believe me, it was a big deal. It was a big deal.
Yeah, of course. Yes, it was.
The judge says that he had concerns about what appeared to be a difficulty with impaneling a jury that would seem to suggest that a great effort was made to get a jury that's racially balanced, at least. He made a comment about it. He did use the word that he was concerned about it, but he didn't stop there. He just made the comment and he let it lie, but it's on the record.
I mean, all I'm saying is that a motion was presented to the judge to re-impanel the jury. If he felt that there was any bias with his jury, he should have taken that motion. It was in his power to grant that motion, and we could have had a new jury selection process. But he didn't. So, I mean, to me, it's like the deck is stacked, and it's becoming a kangaroo court, not only on this case, but the other case. I know you're not discussing the other case. But even with the other cases going on right now, these judges are testifying, they're making up laws, they're letting their personal, and I believe their personal political views influence their decision-making process, and they're taking away the impartiality of a judge. And if your judge isn't impartial, you can't get a fair trial.
Okay. Now, go specifically to this change in this case, as you have spotted it. What was the situation and what is the situation now? What, to your mind, constitutes a major shift in this case?
Well, initially, I followed it loosely in the beginning, just not paying too much to the pretrial, but initially it was a case of three men instituting their own law using quote-unquote civil arrest or civilian arrest, which is false to begin with, and trying to kidnap and detain a young African-American man who was out jogging, under false pretenses. There were text messages that were race that were loaded with racial slurs, and it was a trial of people, three men murdering a man. That was my initial thought. That, as far as my observation of the case, as the trial goes on, it's turning to the traditional white excuse. Oh, the black man was menacing, he was threatening, he was in our neighborhood, and we have the right to go out with our guns and get him, like under the posse comitatus or the mob mentality, get him and drive him out of our neighborhood. That shift seems to be what the defense is trying to show and what the judge is allowing, and not allowing the prosecutor to present the case the way I feel it should be presented, as a narrative of a man being accosted, being threatened, and being murdered by three assailants who allegedly take some type of law enforcement aspect in their behavior, which is not true.
Was there, in that narrative you just gave us, was there a possibility that a charge could be made against the judge and even the jury and the prosecutor that an attack on the white man was allowed because that expectation was there that Aubrey was not to be shown to be a victim?
Well, yeah, it's changing the narrative. I mean, from the jump street of this case, Aubrey was a victim. He's out jogging. He's been known to jog in the area quite frequently. This wasn't any unusual behavior. He stopped. He looked in a house that was open. He didn't take anything out, and he continued jogging. And these men took it upon themselves to implement mob justice. He was a victim. But when you take away that nomenclature, for want of a better word, when you take away that description, it implies other things. And historically in this country, white people have been using mob violence, mob justice, to justify lynchings, to justify the murdering of African Americans, and that goes into this. It's the same thing with the Zimmerman acquittal. You know, you take away the humanity of the victim by not even allowing him to be addressed in court as a victim, and then that changes the whole disposition and puts a whole different color on the events.
So, would you say that you sensed in this trial, for the short time that it has actually been going on, this is the pivotal change in the trial? What was the attitude before this change, and what is the attitude now?
Well, the attitude pre-trial, he was a victim. These men were allowed to stand over his body, go home. They weren't arrested until, I believe, weeks after the actual crime was committed. They were allowed to stand over his body and allow, okay, you did good, go home. And then later on, they were arrested. You know what I'm saying? So they're taking away the humanity of the victim and turning the victim. Now we do the classic, the black man is a threat. We were acting in self-defense of our neighborhood. We were acting in self-defense of our community. We were acting in defense of ourselves. And we changed the whole narrative to make Aubrey seem like he was a possible threat to justify their action. And this is historic as far as even with Zimmerman, even with Rittenhouse, this is historic as far as the justice system goes, especially in that neck of the woods in this country.
What does this change signify to you?
Well, I mean, we live in an imperfect system, and it needs to be changed. I don't know exactly what procedures we can go through to change this, but we need to change the courts. We need to have maybe more stringent federal intervention as far as civil rights violations to take a look at that, because these local courts are not cutting it. I don't think they're able to do it. I think there's so much historic racism entrenched in these local judiciaries and the law enforcement systems, that it's just a reflex action for them to go this route. And they've done it time and time again. I hope these guys don't walk.
Well, you have hit the nail on the head, so to speak. And I want to thank you for coursing us through it. Although, you know, you were going at about 55 miles an hour, but we kept up with you. And your interpretation spoke strictly to the point that I had raised. There has been a change in this trial. It is a change operating on several levels, but you got them. You got them. And now, the victim of the crime, there is no doubt how he is perceived. There's no doubt how he is perceived and how he was perceived. As a black man, in the truest sense of our experience with the meaning of that, how white people would interpret just that fact and how it changes everything. Now, they were trying, when this case started, to deal with the law, and, you know, they were tackling the law, but now they are neck deep in the old formula of demonizing the victim of this crime and reconstituting the old social equation between blacks and whites. Who has power? Who is what? Aubrey automatically is demonized. He does not get from that side of the court. He does not get even an iota of credibility, that he was just a young man. He was just a young man jogging through a neighborhood adjacent to his own. And what was the crime here now? What was the impetus of this crime? What motivated this crime? What motivated the white men to behave the way they did and to react toward him the way they did? That is the question. And when we get into this argument, we get back home. This is back home. This is where the relationship between blacks and whites in America, this is where we get started with that.
Well, it goes back. Remember Yusuf Hawkins? I mean, it all goes back to all of these cases bear a similarity. You're black in the wrong place. You ain't got no business here.
We haven't given you permission to be here. That gives us the right to take away what you consider to be your own permission even to live.
It doesn't. Well, you're not considered an American. I thought I was an American citizen. I thought I could go any way I wanted to in this country. Other than private property. What are you talking about? You know?
Did you get from any of media coverage, any media coverage of this case so far, that essentially is where it is? That's where the case is.
Well, no. I mean, other than you, no. No, but I've never seen that in any of these cases. No one ever brings to the fact that, hey, this is an American citizen. He got the right to go wherever he wants to go. And these men try to subjugate that right based on what they feel is quote-unquote white privilege. I'm a white man. This black man is in my neighborhood. I got the right to stop him, to question him, and to tell him, and to do whatever I want to him. That's the history of America.
Does it surprise you that even the prosecutor has taken this line as well of interpreting this case, that this case is about, you know, whether they should have killed him the way they did, or whether they went a little bit too far. They're not discussing the hard, nasty, gritty truth that this case is what most people don't want to hear about America. This, too, is America. This is America.
Well, it's part of America. It's the foundation of America. Like I've said before, I believe to you and when I discuss other people, America is financially invested in racism. It's built by racism. They took the people that were here. First of all, you know, how can you discover a place where there are people already here? And then when the people already here didn't do what you wanted them to do, you killed them and brought other people here from other places, disoriented them, and make them do what you needed them to do to make this country great. This, the foundation of this country is built in racism and suppression and separation. And until we really it's in the fiber, it's in the laws, it's in the banking, it's in the economy. And until America really addresses that fact that, hey, the only reason this country is here for the past 500 whatever years is because of the foundation of racial oppression that built it, and it is at the core of American justice, of American law, of American business. And until we face that and really give what I honestly believe reparations, and start to tear it apart, we always going to be this way. From Yusuf Hawkins to Ahmed Alvarez, it's always going to be this way.
Well, thank you very much, Ed. That was an excellent analysis. And I happen to agree. I agree completely with what you were saying. Thank you so much for contributing that today. So we finally got to what the point is of this trial and what the trial actually is. It is America's story, but for all kinds of reasons, there is a kind of a hesitancy, a refusal in some cases, to refer even indirectly to it, even though it is at the heart of a case. In this case, of course, we're talking about a brutal murder. Nobody has raised it in the court of law. This is where that should be raised. This is the thinking. This is the tradition. This is our experience in this land. The prosecutor isn't saying it. Nobody is saying it. They're talking strictly now about, you know, what constitutes murder, who did the shooting, blah, 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 blah. Okay. That is important as well. But you would notice the marked absence by both sides, by both the prosecution and the defense, and even the judge. This is not to be discussed. This is not to serve as a necessary reference point in this case. And yet, it determined whether Ahmed Aubrey was to live or die. It determined for three white men that they automatically had privileges, including the privilege of deciding if they would let him live or die, but they pretty much leaned toward him dying and them killing him. That's the case. I don't know how anybody could see this case in any other way. That is the case. They're talking about who knew what, who shot first, who did this. No, it starts with the psychological orientation of the alleged killers. It starts there with their notions of power, their notions of what they can and cannot do, and their notions of what they would allow Aubrey to do, including whether they would allow him to live. It is the very crux of the decision to commit murder. He deserved to die, and they had a right to kill him, to deprive him of his life. Now, you know all hell will break loose in a court of law if an intrepid lawyer were to begin to present this case with all of that as part of the case. So they simplify it, although we know that they have extracted the most volatile arguments, which are the most important ones, to make it appear that it is a simple transaction that went so bad. Three white men acting as self-appointed guardians of their community were under the impression that the very presence of a black man jogging through the neighborhood was unacceptable and made a rational case for murder. We'll have to kill him. And we are the ones uniquely qualified to carry out that murder as they did. You see, I don't understand. What is the hesitancy in lawyers, especially prosecutors? Nobody wants to raise it. Nobody wants to talk about it, even though that is the case. That is the case. That's where it started. That's what conditioned the mindset of the alleged killers. And that's what caused Ahmaud Arbery to lose his life for no reason other than they were, the white men in this case, were implementing an old solution in this country. And we saw it executed to the letter one day as a young man in the prime of his life, at 25 years old, and it comes to a brutal, brutal end. They see to it. And here people, you know, all the media people covering this case, they just can't seem to get to that truth. They just can't seem to see the connection. This is just a case of, you know, people being overzealous. That's the white people. in this case. And maybe they went a little too far. Yes, because the object of their anger, who they pursued, they killed. And were okay with it. They were very much at ease with their actions. So now in the trial, everybody is playing this game. We don't know context. All of a sudden, it's not important. We're talking about this particular discrete, separate and discrete incident that ended with the death of Ahmaud Arbery. There's no history. There's no reference. There's no context. And the change that has occurred here, and I wanted somebody to get to it, is that the victim of this crime was demonized. It allowed the demonization of the victim of the crime. Before, there might have been a little bit of sympathy. It's unfortunate that he lost his life. Yes. But now all hell is breaking loose in that court. It doesn't look like it. But it is happening. And this saintly young man has now become a pariah. We are to feel nothing for him. We are to have no sympathy. We are not to overjudge the actions of the white men who assailed him and killed him in cold blood. We are not to think about it in that way. It was just an unfortunate circumstance. This wasn't murder. It's just people didn't understand each other, you see. These white men were all very good people. One was a retired police officer working in the DA's office. They had good American values. And they were concerned about keeping their community safe. And look what happens. Somebody comes in and destroys it by just jogging through the neighborhood. He created disorder by jogging through the neighborhood. He challenged their racial quotas by jogging through the neighborhood. He was not to even be seen in that neighborhood. These laws are not written anywhere. You know, can't pick up a local pamphlet and see the laws annotated, but everybody knows them. And these men took it upon themselves to take extreme action because a black man is jogging through the neighborhood. But as long as we are looking at it, we should also see the progression in the so-called adjudication of this case. The victim has been killed twice. And it's quite normal. Quite normal for that community to think that way and to behave that way. I mean, even the prosecutor can't find fault with it. Because the prosecutor understands, too, that she shares. There is a common bond. And she dare not seem to be too sympathetic to those people. Because this is not a regular murder case. This is also a case to assure everybody that the rules that they are operating by are perfectly safe. They will not be changed. We're having a little trouble now, but we'll work it out. And that's the change that has occurred. The general nature of the coverage of this case has changed dramatically. And people still think that three white men are being tried for the murder of a black man. No, that's not the case. The case surreptitiously says we are duty bound to support and protect those who carry on the tradition in our name, our collective name. And if we have to kill Ahmaud Arbery again, we will do it. Just to make sure that people understand that we kept our faith with our way of life, which includes absolute hatred for black people. Thanks so much for listening. We're out of time. We'll get back to this again tomorrow. I hope in the way that it was disassembled today, it opened your eyes. Bye-bye.